chapter Yud-Aleph. Really, the story of Yiftach, it begins toward the end of chapter 10. So let's begin to read a number of sukkah at the end of chapter 10, and as usual, that's what I'm beginning to say now. Words, phrases are fascinating, are extremely important, and certainly the whole story of Yiftach is most probably, in terms of all of the incidents that we are told about in Sefer Shoftim, the one that is of the greatest contemporary relevance is the story of Yiftach. That story speaks to our generation more than any other story that appears in the book of Shoftim. With that introduction having been said, now we have to go and demonstrate that it's so. At the end of chapter 11, we'll begin chapter 10, Pasuk 17. That's really what we zeroed in on last week. Jews removed the idols from their midst. They served God. We talked about those four words that God was no longer capable of tolerating. He couldn't take the torment of Israel. The sons of Ammon gathered, and they encamped in Gilad. The children of Israel gathered, and they encamped in Mitzpah. We're talking about two major forces getting ready to face one another in battle. Yomru Ha'am, Sorei Gilad, Ishareyehu, the people, and the officers of Gilad said to one another, Miho Isha Sheyachel, Lihilachem Bifnei Ammon, who is the man that's going to begin to wage war with the sons of Ammon? And that man who will lead us, Yiel Rosh, Lechol Yoshvei Gilad, he will be the head of all of the inhabitants of Gilad. We're most probably talking about the Gilad that was on the east bank of the Jordan. The land of Gilad, there was also a place called Gilad on the west bank. We're talking about that which was on the east bank, next to Ammon and Moab, and the forces of Ammon and Moab are now gathering in order to wage war with the Jewish people. Now watch how every phrase is going to be important. Now the Navi tells us, Yiftach ha-Giladi hayak gibor chayil. Yiftach from Gilad was a valiant, strong man. V'hu ben isha zona. He was the son of a woman who was zona. And here we have precisely the same word that was used about Rachav back there at the beginning of Yehoshua, the second chapter of Yehoshua. And of all things, what the Targum Yonatan ben Uziel says there, he says here as well. There he says that she was an innkeeper, Isha Pundikita'i, an innkeeperin, from the word zon, to sustain and to feed. Targum Yonatan says precisely the same thing here. Of course, other mafarshim want to tell us that the not zona in the term in terms of a loose woman, but she was not the main wife of Yiftach's father, as we'll see. Vayolad Gilad et Yiftach. Gilad is the name of his father. Gilad gave birth to Yiftach. Vatelad Eshet Gilad lo banim. The wife of Gilad gave birth to him to sons. Vayigdalu b'nei ha'isha, and the sons of the woman grew up. Vayigorishu et Yiftach, and they cast out Yiftach. Vayomru lo, and they told him, Lo tinchal the beit avinu, you will not inherit in the house of our father, ki ben isha acheret otah, because you are the son of another woman. Now watch. I'm not certain the direction in which we're going to go. But certainly there are certain very striking similarities and contrasts between the story of Yiftach and the one that we just finished with Avimelech. Avimelech, who was the son of Gidon, Yerubbaal, he was the son of another woman, a woman from Shechem. There were 70 sons, 70 children, who was sort of the more distinguished wife or wives.
Now, Abimelech was the younger of the children, and he slaughtered all of his brothers. Over here it seems that Yiftach is the oldest, and then Eshet Gilad, the wife of Gilad, gives birth to sons, and they grow up, and it's when they grow up that what they want to do now is remove Yiftach from his right of inheritance. Vayomru, they told him, Lo tinchal beit avinu, you are not going to inherit in the house of our father. Incidentally, this is absolutely against halacha. The fact is that inheritance goes according to the father. Since they all have a common father, Gilad, then they all have an equal right to inheritance. What takes place over here is something that's simply unjust. And take a look what it says. Vayigdalu b'nei ha'isha. The sons of the wife grew up, and they cast out Yiftach, and they said to him, you will not inherit in the house of our father. That means they had the chutzpah to tell him directly. And listen, they even used the word bevet, clearly bevet avinu, in the house of our father. And how does nachala go? Inheritance according to Torah goes according to the father. Ki ben isha acheret ata, because you are the son of another woman. In other words, they seem to be speaking out about what's right and what's just, and what they're really saying is something that's absolutely unjust. Absolutely unjust. Yes?
Isn't there a question of a
marriage? There's absolutely no question. One thing is certain.
Because according to this, it was not from a marriage that...
It doesn't make any difference. It makes absolutely no difference. Remember, in Torah, there is no stigma to a child that we would assume born out of wedlock. What's wrong?
I mean, what's wrong? I mean, but here it seems quite clear that there that there was a certain relationship, a formal relationship, between Gilad and this woman. If talking, Yonatan ben Uzziel says that she was Pundakitai, so this was his first wife, and then there was another wife. And listen, people did have a right to more than one wife. And remember, here we have another example of the unusual case of Gidon, the unusual case now of Gilad. There's absolutely nothing wrong. Yes? Accepted, but, remember I said accepted, but unusual. Yes? Are removing him from what is his rightful inheritance. To the point, remember we're talking about the older, or the oldest son of all, and the amount of tzaddas that they made for him reached the point that by Yivrach Yiftach and Yaakov, Yiftach fled from before his brothers, by Yeshev be'Eretz Tov, and he lived in a land called Eretz Tov, by Yitlachtu el Yiftach Anoshim Reikim by Yitzuimo, and a whole bunch of people gathered around Yiftach. What kind of people gathered around him? Reikim, empty people. In other words, people who were going no place, no place in life. They're the ones who gathered around Yiftach. It seems Yiftach clearly was a charismatic person. And here, off there, you know, a kind of foreign legion, people who are not part of the mainstream of society, ended up the Eretz Tov. Eretz Tov, according to Chazal, was someplace a little further east out of, further out in Jordan. Yes? Well, let's say the following. There is one source that I can cite to, in a sense, to strengthen what you're saying, that in Gilad they were a bit tougher. Because the Gemara asks a fascinating question. There were six cities of refuge that were set aside for people who killed unintentionally to flee there. And there were three on the west bank of the Jordan, in Eretz Yisrael proper, and three in Eva Yadin on the east bank. So the Gemara asks, what's happening over here? On the west bank of the Jordan, there are nine tribes. So there are three cities of refuge for nine tribes, and three cities of refuge for two and a half tribes, Reuven, Gad, and a half a tribe of Manasseh. So the Gemara answers, Begilad Shichi Rotzchim. In Gilad, you find there are murderers in Gilad.
and they bring a pasuk in Hosea where Hosea says, Gilad Kiryat Poale Oven Akuva Midam. Gilad is a place where there are evildoers, and it's sort of dripping with blood. Not bad. I'm impressed with your question. I'm even more impressed the fact that I was able to quote a Gemara in a pasuk correctly, I think.
So, yes, there was something. There was something there in Gilad. Yes.
But the mother has nothing to do with it. Over here, it's a family spat between sons,
yeah.
And the sons throw him out. The only point that I want to make is that it was completely unjustified. It was immoral. Let's say it was even unconscionable. It was a terrible thing. Now let's go further in the psukim. Very good. Vayihim yomim, and it came to pass after some time had passed, vayilachamu b'nei Amon im Yisrael, the sons of Amon came to wage war with Israel. In other words, what happened over here at the beginning of this perek, remember the end of the last perek, we were already talking about the two major forces that were now lined up facing one another, Israel and Amon. In Gilad and in Mitzvah. The only thing is, what the beginning of this chapter did, gave us a flashback of the story of Yiftah, so that we should now understand what's going to take place now. So now they repeat that the children of Ammon are getting ready to wage war with Israel. When Bnei Ammon waged war with Israel, the elders of Gilad went to take Yiftach from the land of Tov. It means they have nobody, no man of stature or strength or valor who can lead them. And the only one that they can think of who may be able to lead the Jewish people in battle against their enemies is this fellow Yiftach who's off there in the land of Tov. So the elders of Midian go out to Eretz Tov in order to take Yiftach. Vayomru liYiftach, and they said to Yiftach, Lecha v'hayita lanu katzin, lekatzin. Go, and you will be an officer for us. V'nilachama b'vnei Amon, and we will wage war against the sons of Amon. Alright, this is the deal. This is the deal that they're ready to strike with him. Yiftach is not ready to agree. Vayomi Yiftach, watch what Yiftach says. Yiftach said to the elders of Gilad, Halo atem senetem oti. You hated me. Vatikor shuni mi beit avi. And you cast me out of my father's house. Now remember, who threw him out of his father's house? His brothers threw him out of his father's house. The only thing is, as far as Torah and Jewish ethics is concerned, if the elders of Gilad remained silent, then they acquiesced. And it's as though they did it. There's no such thing as saying, listen, it was not my business, I didn't want to get involved, I didn't know. They were the elders of Gilad, and they were there. They knew of the terrible injustice that was taking place. The fact that they remained silent, they therefore are guilty. And therefore he says to him, why did you come to me? You hated me, Vatid Gorishuni, you cast me out, mi beit avi. Even though the second pasuk of this chapter said, who threw Yiftach out? Who cast him out? It was his brothers who cast him out. But no, on the real level of morality and justice, the fact that the elders of Gilad did nothing means that they too are guilty. Umadura batam elai ata, why do you come to me now, kashet sar lachem? Now when you're in trouble, you come to me. I don't know why, but there's something about this also that is so similar to God in the chapter before. In the chapter before, Jewish people pray to God, listen, save us. So he says, listen, now that you're having difficulty, you come to me, go to the gods that you've been worshipping. Let them provide for you and take care of you. And therefore I will not save you now. Well, what did it say in Pasuk 14 in chapter 10? The Chuvazaku Elohim, go cry out to the God, Asher Bechartem Bam, that you chose. Hey, my Yoshua, Yoshiu Lachan Beit Zaratchem, let them save you at your time of Tzara. In other words, you know what Yiftach was saying? When I was in tzaras, when I was suffering at the hand of my brothers, where were all of you? You all remained silent. Ah! In other words, when I was suffering, you remained silent. Now that you are suffering, you come to me. Vayomru Ziknei Gilad and Yiftach, the elders of Gilad said to Yiftach, Lachain. Let's be very careful as we read this. Lachain, therefore, Ata now, Shavdu Elecha. We have returned to you. We'll have to see what this means. V'halachto imanu. You should go with us. V'nilchamta b'vnei Amon. And you will wage war with the sons of Amon. V'ayita lanu ledosh. You will be the head l'chol yoshvei Gilad to all of the inhabitants of Gilad. We have to go back to that pasuk 7. There's all sorts of revealed and concealed negotiations going on over here between Yiftach and the elders of Gilad. We're talking about extremely bright people who are maneuvering through a shtickle minefield, and they are sending messages to one another. Yiftach sends a number of messages. One message that he sends to them is he is unwilling to accept their offer. What was their offer? Their offer was in Pasuk 6. Vayomru liYiftach, they said to Yiftach, Lecha go, vayita lanu lekatzin, you will be an officer. What did it say in Pasuk 18, the last Pasuk of the chapter before? In the last pasuk of the chapter before, we already know what they really have in mind. The person who's going to begin to wage war against Bnei Amon, Yiel Rosh, Lechol Yoshvei HaGilad, will be appointed the head of all of the inhabitants of Gilad. The only thing is, they don't show their full hand. You know, when you negotiate, so you come in with a low offer, right? So what do they tell him? They know that they're already authorized to offer him that he should be the head of all of the inhabitants of Gilad. They said, listen, come with us to war, and we'll make you an officer. Shain Edaf, hoping that they should make him an officer. What, they'll make him a Rav Seren. So what, he has his own army, what does he need? And what else does it say? V'nilachama b'vnei Amon, and we will wage war. We will wage war with Amon. We. In other words, you'll be our... You will be an officer. All right, an officer. That's him. But we're going to wage war. When Yiftach turns them down in Pasuk 7, he's sending a number of messages. Now, the basic message is, your offer is absolutely unacceptable. Now, you're going to have to up the ante. You're going to have to up the ante. It's more than that. They're leaving him with the impression that, you know, they're going to wage war and he'll just be an officer. He says, now that you need me, you come to me when you need me. In other words, what he's telling them is, without me, you're nothing. Don't tell me that you're going to make me an officer and we will wage war, you and me. What you want is that I should go out and wage war. Now let's watch the response of the elders of Gilad. Remember, this is an extremely tense confrontation or meeting that takes place over here. I don't know how many years it is after Yiftach has been thrown out. We're talking about something that was ignominious. It was a shame and an embarrassment to the point where by Yivrach, he had to run away. He simply had to run away for no fault of his own. Yiftach has to run away. This was an extremely embarrassing thing. This is the kind of thing that a person, you know, you carry the pain with you for a lifetime. You never really get rid of the pain. Mitachutz, yesh od. Yesh od. You never really get rid of the pain. But wait a minute. It works two ways. It works two ways. Become how would you have expected them to come to Yiftach now? You know, they should have come to Yiftach. And this is another message that he's sending them. Aha! If in a sense they would have come to him and they would have said, Yiftach, please forgive us. We let you down. We abandoned you. We were wrong. We're sorry. Forgive us. Let bygones be bygones. Let's forget the past. Let's start all over again. Klal Yisrael needs you. Yes?
Sandy, when you need somebody to save you, just take a look at what goes on in the world every step of the way. Yesterday's enemies become today's close, warm friends. Mitzikishtzich, you don't see it every day. To use the most extreme example of them all, Arafat and Assad are able one day to send rockets, and the next day they can cancel the kitchen. Once, twice, three times. Once, twice, three times. I mean, there aren't... there are all sorts of alliances in life. The least that they have to do it, even if they had to do it only as a means of getting him. Klal Yisrael is at stake. What are you going to tell me? Your pride? Because of your pride, you're going to leave Klal Yisrael without leadership. So if you have to bury your pride and go to him, so why don't you say I'm sorry? Why don't you say I'm sorry? That's what this, in a sense, they're saying in Pasuk 8, Vayomru Zibnei Gilad al Yiftach. What's the meaning of this phrase, Lachain, therefore, Ato now, Shavnu Eilecho, we have returned to you? What do they mean? According to some of the Mefarshim, it means that there's a process of tshuva taking place by virtue of the fact that we came here. Do you know what it means? Well, it said that the elders of Gilad went out to the land of Tov. Tell me, a journey of that sort is not already a journey that demonstrates that we need you and we're coming to you? All right, so this is the first step in a process of reconciliation. So go with us. We've already buried our pride by coming here. Now watch what they say to him. V'nilchamta b'vnei Amon. You will wage war with B'nai Amon. What did they say before when they invited him to come? We will wage war. As though the elders of Gilad are in greater tzalaik, as you understand. All they need is some kind of an administrator that's going to take them out the battle. But they're going to fight the battle. No. They know now what the truth really is, and they knew it all along, and now they say it clearly to you. V'nil chamta, you will wage war with B'nai Amon. V'ayita lanu l'rosh. L'chol Yoshvei HaGilad, they've upped the ante. What was it? Now they are saying precisely what they said at the end of chapter 10. The one who's going to lead us out to war, he's the one who will be appointed as the head of all of the inhabitants of Gilad. Now they offer him that he should be Rosh L'chol Yoshvei Gilad. They're not simply going to offer him Katzin. You think that he's going to accept that kind of an offer? Vayomer Yiftach now, Yiftach says to the Zibnei Gilad, And watch every nuance of what he's saying. This, in a sense, isn't Yiftach the one that is sort of the Oisvorf, you understand? The one who has to flee from home, a man without a country, floating around over there, the foreign legion, out Be'eretz Tov. Yiftach says to the elders, Yom Yiftach Ositni Gilad, Yiftach said to the elders of Gilad, Im Meshivim Atem Oti Lihi Lachem B'vnei Amon. Now that you're bringing me back in order that I should wage war with B'nai Amon, V'natan Hashem Otam L'fanai, this Oizvor Yiftach is the first one who brings the name of God into the entire conversation. Nobody over here has yet said Be'ezchat Hashem, Im Yetzah Hashem. Nobody said a word. The people of Gilad had said, "V'nilachama, we're going to wage war with B'nai Amon."
Finally, they agree with him, and they say, okay, you will wage war with the Naaman. Sort of, we'll wage war, you'll wage war. God seems to have been forgotten over here. Yiftach is the one who says, the Natan Hashem Otam Lefanai, and God will give them before me. Anochi Ayelachem L'Rosh. I will be the one who will lead you. Yes, I'm ready to agree to the... I'm ready to agree. The Malbim goes one step further. Malbim goes one step further. You know what he's saying to them over here? In a sense, he is continuing his negotiation with them. He says, listen, if I'm going to go out to war, and God is going to give the sons of Ammon into my hands, I will automatically be the head of all of the inhabitants of Gilead. I'm going to need you to appoint me? What are you giving me? What are you giving me? What are you offering me? You're offering me that I will lead you against war, and then in reward for leading you out to war and being victorious, shine, you're going to make me the leader, the head of all Yoshvei Gilead. He's telling them, you know what? When and if I do that with God's help, I'm not going to need you. You know what? Anochi ehyelachem l'rosh. I'm automatically going to be the head of all of... Who then will be the great leader? I'm going to be Storm and Norman coming back after this great campaign. Of course I'll be the Rosh L'chol Yoshvei Gilead. So what are you offering me? Vayomru Zikne Gilead al Yiftach. So the elders of Gilead said to Yiftach, and finally, isn't it interesting? Now, once he has already injected God's name into the conversation, they're also becoming Thum. Hashem Yeshomea Benotenu. God will be the one who will hear between us. If we will not do precisely as your words, and you know what your words are? Your words are that you will become the leader of all of Gilead now, even before you go out to war. And watch how that will happen. Yes? Two shiurim on the first chapter in Yahushua. This was the second shiur on the first chapter in Yahushua. I didn't have it on tape someplace. Yes, go ahead.
Like that,
because
you think he'll be happy with it. Because you don't want to
be
like, he'll be happy with that. It's not the real thing. You don't want to make it too.
The real, And you know what? Or maybe, no. Or maybe just the opposite. Maybe they all understood that the time for Melech has not yet arrived. The one Melech that they had so far brought disaster upon the Jewish people. During the 300 years so far, we're going to see, this is 300 years into the period of the Shoftim. 300 years, and there was Shoftim, but there was only one Melech. The one Melech was Avimelech. And Avimelech brought terrible tragedy. I don't think they want to use the term Melech anymore. And you know what? He may even be happy with that. Yiftach also does not want to be Melech. He doesn't want necessarily to become the head of a dynasty. All that he's interested in is to be Lechosh. So it could work two ways. Either they're not offering him enough, or neither he nor they want any more than Rosh. Well, Mom, yeah, go ahead. To Yosef. Yes. Yeah, you, Sandy. Yeah, go ahead. Well, you're really asking a lot of questions today. Yeah, good. All right, then, you know what job remains for me, and I don't know whether we will succeed in completing that job today. You know what remains for me to demonstrate? That Yiftach was not a gangster. Yiftach was a great leader of the Jewish people. He may not have been as great as others, but here is the Gemara that says, Yiftach bedoro, to Shmuel bedoro. Yiftach in his generation was like Shmuel in his generation. And more than that, it was not only Yiftach. The Gemara at one point talks about Yiftach ubeit dino. Yiftach and his bed din. Yiftach was not just a simple street yingle. He may not have been, he certainly was not, of the caliber of others. the Gemara refers to Yiftach as Kal Shebekalim. Kal Shebekalim. How do you translate Kal Shebekalim? An easy way would be to call him a lightweight, but it means a great deal more than that. Was not the great, necessarily the great tzaddik, but he was, for his time, he was the leader who did the job. And we're going to see his knowledge of Torah, his knowledge of Jewish history. He wasn't a gangster. Yes, Uncle. Let me read a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah for you. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah is the Gemara that says, Yiftach bedoro kishmuel bedoro. Yiftach in his generation was like Shmuel. L'lamedcha. Listen to the words of the Gemara. In order to teach you. Shafilu kal shebekalim. Even the lightest of the light. V'nitmane parnas al atzibur. If he's appointed a leader over the community. Harehu ka'abir sheba'abirim. He's like the mightiest of the might. Of the mightiest. Because he becomes a leader of a Klal Yisrael, I would say that it means that he has a certain siyata deshmaya that God will be with him, because he represents not only himself, he now represents Klal Yisrael. The Medrash Tanchuma in last week's Sedra, Parshat Bechukotai, the Medrash Tanchuma says about Yiftach, Lo Hoya Ben Torah. He wasn't a Ben Torah. The Medrash Tanchum in Parshat Kukat later on in Bamidbar is going to say, Lo Hoya B'Kulon Kal Min Yiftach. From all of them, all of the Shoftim, there was none who was as Kal, as a, I don't know how to describe it, lightweight, not as pious as all of the rest. And despite that, he is the one who is going to be the messenger of God. He's going to be the one through whom God is going to bring a Yeshua to Klal Yisrael. The Kal Shebekalim, this lightweight Yiftach, because he became the leader of the Jewish people, then he became Abir Sheba Abirim, the Gemara says. He becomes one of the mighty of the mighty. And we're going to see that God is going to be with him. The Pasuk is going to say it clearly. As I say time and time again, the Rabbeinu Shleilim uses the shluchim that are available and that can do the job. When Batikzar Nafsho, Bamal Yisrael, he can no longer tolerate the torment of the Jewish people, and they need a Yeshua, and the man who's there is Yiftach, then Yiftach is the one who's going to do the job. And it is not for us to ask, Rabbeinu Shleilim, you couldn't have gotten a Eves Hashem Regid. You couldn't have gotten a Ben Torah to be the leader. You couldn't have gotten an Abir Sheba Abirim. The Rabbeinu Shleilim uses the people who are available. They're the ones who can bring that Zola. They're going to bring it, because the time has come for Yeshua for Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael can't take it anymore. So Yiftach is going to be the leader. And he's going to be a very good leader. He's going to make mistakes. He's going to make mistakes, a terrible, tragic mistake in his own personal life, but he's not going to make a mistake in his function as leader of the Jewish people. Now watch. Look at what happens in Pasuk 11. There's something dramatic that takes place. Vayelech Yiftach im Ziknei Gilad. Yiftach went with the elders of Gilad. Remember, the elders of Gilead had gone to the land of Tov in order to bring Yiftach back, come and lead us. Yiftach agrees. He goes back with the elders of Gilead. Vayasimu ha'am oto aleim l'rosh ulekatzin. You know what happens when they bring Yiftach back? The populace. They're the ones who create the facts on the ground. The elders of Gilad seem sort of to disappear. They brought him back, and all of the negotiations and the deals that may have been made between the elders of Yiftach and the elders of Gilad and Yiftach, now he comes, the people make him Rosh V'Katzin. They accept him. They see him. Does it mean, and I wonder, it can mean a number of things.
It could mean, you know what? Sometimes there is the healthy sense of the people. There's an instinctive feeling that the people have that this is the man. And they demonstrate their trust and confidence in this man. And the moment that they demonstrate this trust and confidence, it's no longer important what kind of deals or arrangements were made between the Zikne Gilad and Yiftach. He now receives his mandate to act and to serve the Jewish people. He receives it directly from the people. Yiftach is the one who speaks before God in mitzvah. It seems, what's God doing in mitzvah? The mitzvah we're talking about over here is, there was a mitzvah on the west bank of the Jordan, here we're on the east bank of the Jordan. There was a period of time that there was a mizbeach in mitzvah. What does it mean? What do you mean he's speaking before God? You know what it means, according to Mefarshim, that he's speaking before God in mitzvah, says Rashi. Beautiful Rashi. Lemakom shenit asvu kulam shashchina shora al rov tzibur. There was no special altar there. There was no mishkan. There was nothing. Nothing. You know what? You had a lot of Jews there. And where there's a lot of Jews, that's where the Shekhinah is, the divine presence. Whatever Yiftach says now, Yiftach is saying the presence of God. God is there. Where Klal Yisrael is, that's where God is. Rashi. Magnificent, magnificent Rashi. Now begin the hard negotiations between Yiftach and the king of Bnei Ammon. And this is extremely, extremely relevant for our days. Vayishlach Yiftach Malachim El Melech Bnei Ammon. Yiftach sent messengers to the king of the sons of Ammon, saying, Mali v'loch, ki bata elai lihilachem ba'atzi. What is there between me and you that you've come to wage war against me in my land? Why have you attacked? We're going to have to see the halachic implications of all of this. In a sense, what he's doing now is either he's extending a hand of peace, or at least he's attempting, according to the Mefarshim, to rule out all possibility of a peaceful resolution of the crisis. So he sends a message, Mali v'loch, what is there between me and you? Ki bata elai lehilachem ba'atzi, that you come to me, lehilachem, to wage war with me in my land. Listen to this. King of the sons of Ammon said to the messengers of Yiftach, Yisrael took my land when they came out of Egypt. May Arnon va'ad Yabok va'ad Yarden, the land from the Arnon to the Yabok. Arnon and Yabok were two rivers between the Arnon and the Yabok, to the north and to the south, to the Yarden, to the west. V'ata now Hashiva attend b'shalom, give back that land in peace. We want our land back. By Yosef od Yiftach. Yiftach sent another message. By Yiftach malachim el nel b'nei Ammon, and he sent messengers to the king of b'nei Ammon. By Yomalo, call my Yiftach, so says Yiftach. Lo lokach Yisrael et Eretz Moab et Eretz Bnei Ammon. Jewish people did not take the land of Moab, nor did they take the land of the Bnei Ammon. Ki ba lo tami Mitzrayim, and you know what? This Yiftach, this Kal Shebekalim, gives him a lesson in history. Ki ba lo tami Mitzrayim, when they went up from Egypt, Vayelech Yisrael b'midbar ad Yamsuf, Israel traveled through the desert until they came to the Yamsuf, Vayovo Kedisha, Kadesh, and then they came to Kadesh, which was in Midbar Sinai. And when we were in Midbar Sinai and we prepared to journey across the east bank of the Jordan in order to enter Eretz Yisrael from the east. Vayishlach Yisrael malachim el melech Edom lemar. Israel sent messages to the king of Edom saying, Ebra no be'artzoch, please let me cross your land. V'lo shama melech Edom, the king of Edom didn't listen to us.
Israel also sent messengers to the king of Moab, and he didn't want to let us go through, so we remained by Yeshiv Yisrael, the Kadesh. Israel remained in Kadesh. And then we began to journey again. So instead of going through Edom or Moab or Ammon, what Klal Yisrael had to do was to take a circuitous path. Imagine this. Along the Jordan, the east bank of the Jordan. It would be great if we'd have a map, but let's see if you could put the map in your mind. And we're going to see, Mir Hashem, we'll see the Psukim and Torah that deal with this as well. Imagine the east bank of the Jordan, down in the south, below the Yam HaMelech, the other side of the Jordan was Edom. Above it was Ammon and Moab. And then above them, Ammon and Moab were above and to the east. And then you had the land of Sichon, king of the Amori, and Og, Melech HaBashan. So now, if Edom does not let them travel through the land of Edom in their northward journey, and Moab and Ammon don't let them go through, there's only one choice. The choice is to move further out, eastward into the desert, go around Edom, around Ammon and Moab, then make a turn to the left, going westward into the land of Sichon and Og to the Jordan. Moshe waged war with Sichon and Og. Now, what had happened was the following. Before Israel came to the east bank of the Jordan, Sichon, king of the Amori, had waged war with Ammon and Moab, and he captured from them that piece of land from the Arnon to the Yabok. That land was captured by Sichon. When Israel waged war with Sichon, that land now, which had formerly been indeed the land of Ammon and Moab, that land now became Israel's. Not because we ever waged war with Ammon or Moab. The war with Ammon and Moab had been waged by Sichon. He captured it. He took it. And he waged war with us, we took it from him. Now watch. Pasuk 18, Vayelech Bamidbar, so Israel went through the desert, Vayosav et Eretz Edom, et Eretz Moab, and Israel went around the land of Edom, and around the land of Moab, Vayavo mi Mizrach Shemesh, and then he came from the east to the land of Moab, Vayachanu be'ezer Arnon, and they encamped at the other side of the river Arnon. For lo bo bigvul Moab, we never set foot. Israel never set foot within the boundary of Moab. Ki Arnon, the river Arnon, was the gvul, was the border of Moab, and we stayed on the other side. Vayishlach Yisrael malachim el Sichon melech Amori melech Cheshbon. Israel sent messengers to Sichon, the king of the Amori, the king of Cheshbon. Remember, it was Sichon who had taken away land from Ammon and Moab. Ayom Elo Yisrael, Israel said to him, Nabronot Yaretz Zichad, Mekomi, let me cross your land till I come to my place. I don't want to wage war with you, I just want to go straight through until I come to my place. And Sichon did not believe Israel, he didn't trust them to let them go through his border. By yes of Sichon and Kolamo, Sichon gathered together his entire people, by Yachanu B'Yohatzah, he encamped in Yahatzah, by Yilachem, and Israel went out and he waged war with Israel. By Yitin Hashem Elokei Yisrael at Sichon, that Kol Amo B'Yad Yisrael, by Yaakom, God, the God of Israel, gave Sichon and all of his people into the hands of Israel. By Yaakom, and they smote them. By Yidash Yisrael at Kol Eretz HaAmodi, Israel inherited the land of the Amodi, Yoshev HaAretz, and he those who live in that land. By Yishu, and therefore, by having conquered the Amori who attacked us, by conquering the Amori who attacked us, whatever was the land of the Amori now became our land. By Yishu at Kol Kvul HaAmori, they inherited all of the land of the Amori. From Arnon to the Yabok, Arnon and Yabok are the two rivers north and south. Min HaMidbar, from the Arabian desert to the east, the Ar HaYarden to the west, that whole piece of land, we took from Sichon. V'yato, now, Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Hodi Shetu Amori, God the God of Israel, cast out the Amori, Mipnei Amo Yisrael, before his people Israel. V'yato Tidoshenu, you're going to inherit this? God is the one who gave us that land. You're going to inherit it. And now he becomes, let's say he goes into the kill.
All of that that God has given us as an inheritance from before them, that we will inherit. V'ata now, atov tovata, are you better than Balak ben Zippor, the king of Moab, harov rov in Israel, who contended with Israel, im nilchom nilcham banu, who had wanted to wage war with us? Did he wage war with us? King of Moab, Balak, did he wage war with us? He didn't fight with us. What are you coming to fight?
What did Balak try and do?
Balak tried to curse. So he hired a professional cursor. But did he fight with us? Did he fight with us? B'shevet Yisrael b'cheshbon of the Notea. When Israel settled in Cheshbon, Cheshbon was the city of Sichon, Uvenoteha, and all of the cities around, Uba'aror, Uvenoteha, and in the city of Aror, and all of the cities around it, Uvechol Ha'arim Asher Al Yedei Arnon, and all the cities that are near the river Arnon, Shlosh Me'ot Shana. We've been settled there for 300 years. And we're going to see it's precisely 300 years from the time the Jews entered Eretz Yisrael. Yiftach, precisely 300 years, to the day, to the year. U'matua lo hitzaltum ve'et ahi, why didn't you try and save this land in all of these 300 years? Now you wake up! You want the right of return. We should give you back the land now. V'anochi lo chatati lach, I didn't sin to you. V'atol seiti ro lihilachin, but you do something, you're doing evil by coming to wage war with me. Yishvot Hashem ha-shofet hayom. Bein b'nei Yisrael, bein b'nei Amon. Let God judge today between the sons of Israel and the sons of Amon. Let me ask you, which is worth more? A piece of land or the life of a Jewish soldier? What's Yiftach doing over here?
Bnei Amon are saying,
we want land for peace. In the event that you give us land, there will be peace. And in the event that you don't give us the land that we want, there won't be peace.
Now,
this is quite a, that's quite a good deal according to some of our people on the extreme, many of our people, all of our people on the extreme left, and even some of our people on the extreme religious right. The life of a Jewish soldier, this is, I mean, that's valuable. What do you mean? A piece of inanimate land? Now, is this not of contemporary significance? What's Yiftach doing over here? Yiftach is going to endanger Jewish lives. For what? For a piece of land? There was an article, yes, in Hamodiah. 2 weeks ago, Lechvod Yom HaAtzmaut, there was an article in Hamodiah that, you know, 17,000 fell in the defense of this country. Independence is not worth the life of one Jewish soldier. Independence is not worth. But there's some kind of a value to independence. There's such sophistry involved over here. What's the sophistry? In other words, like you leave the impression as though the life of a Jewish soldier, I'm so concerned. I'm ready to give it all up. It's not worth the whole thing for me. One Jewish life. Hashtenish. Yiftachu beit dino. Yiftachu beit dino say, listen, Yedidi Yakar, we're not going to give you back up. Shall. Not a single piece of land are you going to get back. We're not going to negotiate about it. We're not going to give you a back piece of land. You want to go out to wage war? We're going to go fight. Will soldiers fall in battle? Yes, they're going to fall in battle.
We won't do it. We're not going to give you land for peace. What you want is unjust, it's unfair, and we're not going to do it. So I know what you're going to tell me. At this point, you may very well tell me, listen, what am I proving from here? I'm proving because a kal shebekalim shelo hoya ben Torah. He's the one who's ready to fight for a piece of land. Because listen, he's not a ben Torah, and he's a kal shebekalim. He's Yiftach. He's the son of a zona. So of course he's ready. But does he know the value of Jewish life? He's ready to throw away Jewish lives for a shtick of land out there. Not on the West Bank. Out there on the East Bank of Hashlug and a piece of land over there, is that worth more than the life of an Israeli soldier? So you should know. Pasuk 28, V'lo shama melo b'nei Ammon al divrei Yiftach asher sholach echelav. The king of the sons of Ammon didn't listen to the words of Yiftach that Yiftach sent to him. V'atehi al Yiftach ruach Hashem. It's not a psak halacha of Yiftach that right-wing extremist who's not a ben Torah and doesn't know the value of Jewish life, but the heel of Ruach Hashem, the Spirit of God descended upon him. The Spirit of God. This is what God wanted. He paskin like Yiftach. What are you talking about? We're going to go ahead and give back land, and today it's one piece of land. And what will it be tomorrow and the day after? 300 years later, they wake up that they want this land back. You can't do anything of the sort. You cannot give in to such demands. Because you know what it means? Whenever there's a demand, all you do is you threaten war. That's what's so terrible about this whole idea that, you know, the infinite value of a Jewish life, that means, you know what we do? We would that way be putting ourselves at the mercy of the enemy. If the enemy knows that a Jewish life is worth to us more than anything, so then they're being continually made demands. Every time they make a demand, it's a piece of land or a Jewish life. Jewish life is worth more. Give them back the land. Then it's the next piece of land. Oh, same cheshbon. Jewish life or a piece of land. Give them the land. Until we're left with nothing. The Rebbeim paskened otherwise. And the Rebbeim paskened that Yiftach is absolutely right. You can't give in to such demands. You're going to give in to such demands, what you're going to do ultimately is destroy the Jewish state. It's all over. No people can give in to a demand of this sort. But he al Yiftach, Ruach Hashem. By Yavar et HaGilad that Menashe, the Spirit of God came down upon him. You know where else it said that the Spirit of God came down? Of all things, Shimshon and Gidon, you're both right. Shimshon, Gidon, and Yiftach, whom the Gemara refers to as Shlosha Kalei Olam. The three of them together are the three lightweights. And by all of them it says that the Spirit of God descended upon them. How odd of God to choose Yiftach, Gidon, and Shimshon. Unless, of course, it's not so odd of God to choose these three. These are the ones, they're the ones who did the job. Yiftach had a very, very fine and precise sense of Jewish history. According to the halacha, we're also going to find out that there was really, really no halachic requirement to extend the hand of peace to Ammon u'Moav. In other words, if he wanted to, he had the halachic right to go ahead and just attack. Kill! But no, that's not what he does. He's going to talk first before he goes to war. He will talk, though the halacha doesn't require him to talk. He's going to talk until he exhausts every reasonable possibility, short of giving in to their demands. Can't give in to such demands. You give in to such demands, then it's all over. The whole game is over. Yes, sir. Any other people, but a day, 2 days. I mean, alliances don't change from one day to the next. I mean, that's the kind of demand that you can make on Klal Yisrael, but you cannot make that demand. Yes?
It's not so. People were as intelligent then as they are today. And not only they were as intelligent, I'm not ready to accept that. Just because they may not have had the pseudo-sophistication of today, no, I don't believe that 20th century man is something to be proud of. 20th century man is the worst killer in all of world history. I'm totally unimpressed with 20th century man. So he makes me computers and smaller and smaller chips. I'm not impressed. Not impressed. Yes?
Is there something deeper in being calm?
You're not going to get me into that. Absolutely not. I'm not. You're not going to get me into that. Oh, no. Oh, no. Yeah. They were intelligent people. It's quite clear that Yiftach understands that what's happening over here is this is really an excuse to go to war. Yiftach understands that this is an excuse to go to war. Give us the land. And he knows clearly, in the event that they would cede some of the land back, there would be a further request for additional land afterward. It was the strong feeling that they have the right to make whatever demands they want of the weaker. And if Claudius has one of two choices. If they're really weak, you know what? Then they have no choice but to cede property and just hope that they'll never be attacked anymore or continue to cede it. In the event that they are strong, then they have to go out and they have to wage war. But I believe this whole idea of the life of a Jewish soldier is worth more than a piece of land. We once spoke about this at much greater length. It's phony. It's phony. It's not out of a sense of as though the left wingers have more concern for human life, and we are the bloodthirsty ones who couldn't care less, and land is more important. Over here, land means the beginning of chipping away. This today, tomorrow, it will be more. And Yiftach understood that that's precisely what's taking place over here. And therefore, as I say, the Rebbeinu Shlomo is the one who passed him back to here. Yiftach, Ruach Hashem. And that's why this editorial or this article that I refer to as though, if we would know that we would have to pay this kind of a price, wasn't worth it. Independence wasn't worth it. That's a pseudo-sophisticated approach. I got to tell you, I think it was this morning. Just this morning, sometimes I think of things like, and I have to stop writing, in that sheer that I've been responding to for the last yesterday and today. My dear friend, who described, the 500,000 North African Jews who are torn away from their roots by the Zionists. So he said, if we would have been asked before the fact, if we would have been asked before the fact, before the establishment of the state, like that this is the price that we're going to have to pay, what would we have done? Is there anybody who would have been willing to pay that price? Then he goes on to say, in other words, if you would be asked, you can have a state, but you know what it's going to cost you? It's going to cost you 500,000 Jews that are going to be torn away from Kashrus, from Shmirat Shabbos, from their roots. They're going to become gangsters. You ready to pay that price?
Well, when you compare 500,000 to 6 million...
It's over. That was over.
We know that we need a state to survive the Holocaust.
Can you answer me the question? Are you ready to pay the price of 500,000 Jews being turned into Mechalei Shabbos and Eichlei Treifas and drug pushers and gangsters that we export to the rest of the world and thousands of them crowding the prisons of Israel? You ready to pay the price?
That's just the first generation.
What? kind of a second generation will come from Mechalei Shabbos and Eichleit Tzveifus. Ahead. We don't know that, but we know what happened here.
I think they're ignoring the other half of the, they're giving you one choice, but they're ignoring the other possibility that if you
left... Don't know. We don't know. All right. So that's... okay, go ahead.
They think they're ceding the land for peace. You know, peace give up the land, so they're not really...
All right, good. I see that I'm challenging you and exorcising you. And, you know, there are times that you have this instinctive feeling sometimes in your neshama that there's something wrong with this argument. The only thing is, of course, the argument is, it sounds like a very, very powerful one. It's difficult. You tried to do it, and you had a lot of guts. In other words, you were trying to do it. You were trying to say, yes, I'm ready to pay that price. You know what they would do with you? You know what they would do with you if you would give an answer of that sort? Yes, I'm ready. I'm ready to pay the price of 500,000 Jews torn away from their roots, their payas shorn away. But we know in our neshama that there's something wrong with it. The only thing is we can't put our finger, we can't pinpoint what it is. I don't know, I think this morning I pinpointed it. To be able to get to the heart of a pseudo-sophisticated argument in order to see wherein lies the fallacy. You know there's a fallacy, but you can't figure out where the fallacy lies. All right, let me ask you the following. I'll ask you another question. In Parashas Nitzavim Or Vayelech, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says the following. Behold, you are going into Eretz Yisrael. Ah, here it is. Vayomer Hashem Moshe. God says to Moshe, behold, the end of your days are coming. Vayomer Hashem Moshe. God said to Moshe, Hincha Shochevim Avotecha, behold, you are going to die. Kam Ha'am Hazeh. And this people is going to arise, the Zona Acharei Elehei Nechar Ha'aretz. They are going to follow the deities of the land. They're going to become idolaters. Asher Hu Bo Shama Bekirbo, in the land in which they come in their midst. Va'azovani, they're going to forsake me. Ve'hefer et briti, and they will break my covenant. Asher Korati Ito, the covenant that I make with them. What happens if I would be standing there together with Yehoshua on the left bank of the Jordan, and I would say, Yehoshua, I'm not going into Eretz Yisrael. I'm not going into Eretz Yisrael. I know with absolute certainty that once we cross the Jordan, you know what's going to happen at some point in history? These people are going to become idolaters. I don't want to go. I'm staying right here. I'm not ready to pay that price. What do you think Moshe would have said to Azach Hevneman? You know what he would have said to Azach Hevneman? You're a Meragel. You're a destroyer of Israel. It's your fathers who pulled this same kind of chumash shtick. And therefore, you know what they brought upon Klal Yisrael? They put upon them absolute destruction. Right? Let's go back to what we were talking about, our question. What happens if I would have... The sophistry of the question is, would you be ready to pay the price of 500,000... if you would know that 500,000 Moroccan Jews are going to be torn away from their roots, would you have done it? Wait a minute. That's not the whole story. And what about 1 million Jews who are in DP camps and in Cyprus who are clamoring, we do want a state? What are you going to do with the conflicting demands that are being made on you? Hundreds of thousands of Jews are still in the DP camps of Europe. 100,000 Jews are in Cyprus. They demand, we have to go someplace. We need a place where to go. In other words, and more than anything else, the
question wasn't asked of us, because God has his own plans for history. And he knew that if he would have asked us the question, you understand, and more than anything else, the march of history in God's divine plan for Klal Yisrael cannot take into consideration the choice, the evil choice of the Rasha. Will the Rebbe Shem therefore destroy his world, as the Gemara says? Will God destroy his world because there are those who bow down to the sun or to the stars? Shotim Shabolim, the Shota, the Rasha, does not become the one who will be given the right exclusively to author history. So you're going to tell me that the history of Klal Yisrael should be dictated by those who may cause Jews to sin? So why did the Rebbeinu bring us into Eretz Yisrael? Nevot was going to be Choto Machlis Yisrael. So what should you have done? Klal Yisrael should remain in the Midbar forever? History must march on. God's divine plan for Klal Yisrael has to continue. There will be aberrations, there will be Rishoyim, there will be backsliding. Part of the process. It was good enough for God then. So therefore, when you ask the question today, it's just plain, downright, demagogic sophistry. In order, you know, because it, very few people would have the guts, your guts, to say, yeah, I don't care, let 500,000 Moroccan Jews become a Chalei Shabbos. Who cares? It was pretty, that's exactly how I would have interpreted. Yes, if that's the price you had to pay, no, we got you where we want you. No, you can't get away with that. That's exactly what they would do. They'd make ash and blood out of you. And the whole thing is, you know what it is? It's a cheap shot. It's a very cheap shot that can easily influence people like, oh God, the state just wasn't worth it. State wasn't worth the people who were going to die in its defense. Oh, hey, what the infinite value of a life. But there's a plan. God has a divine plan. If not, you know what? He should have left us in the time. Let's forget the whole thing. Let's forget the march of history. Forget it. Of course there are prices to be paid. Are we happy with the prices that have to be paid? Now there's one kind of price, the price that we know that we have to pay. There's the other kind of price that's going to be exacted by us, from us, by people who are bad. So I'm going to let people who are bad be the architects and the authors of history? It's plain, downright demagogic sophistry. Well, go ahead.
You don't know what they were doing.
That point was made.
I was sitting here when I went to school here.
Except that it's clear. It's clear that there was a clearly directed and planned effort to tear them away from their religion. We cannot doubt, we can't disagree with that. I mean, it's documented, it's history, there's no question about it. But to use that as well, if I would have been given the choice, I would have voted against the state because of that, is just plain being negative.
It's not connected anymore.
Yes, but you have to be able to say it. You have to be able to express it. How do you express it? Yes, one more. Go ahead. Yeah, but just because there's the option of... Yeah, right. But listen, let me ask you. If you would have been asked that the price you're going to have to pay is $500,000 Moroccans, you would have paid that price? In other words, so therefore I should do permit people to do sins, but it said that was not too good. That was not too good. In other words, what you have to do is you have to say that the question is an unfair question. It's not a real question. It's an illogical. And therefore the question is only, as I say, a demagogic form of getting across a point. It's not a real question. And nobody was asked the question. And history doesn't ask any questions. And certainly the Rebbeinu Shlomo in his plans, if he would have asked us, he knows. He never asked us. The only time he asked us, he must have kept his finger crossed. When he said, will you accept my Torah or not? That was one question he ever asked us. And where we had,
where we had the good sense to say, Nasa v'nishma, I'm telling you, I have no idea from when this is coming. That was the schus of Abraham, Yitzchak, Yankiv, Moshe, Aaron, Echveis, Yosef, David, Shlomo. The one time we were asked a question, we answered, and I'm telling you, the Rebbeinu Shalom most probably felt after that, oy, thank God, we got this question over with. He must have been a nervous wreck before he asked the question. And that's all in a manner of speaking kivyachol, so to speak. Otherwise, there were no other questions asked. Klal Yisrael wasn't asked whether they want to go into Eretz Yisrael or not. They were not asked. Nobody asked them. Did HaKadosh Baruch Hu ask Avraham Avinu? Tell him, lech lechol Eretz Eretz Yisrael l'Arz Chom Yibayt Avicha El Horetz Hasher Arecha. Nobody asked them any questions. Nobody asked them any questions. If you go through Chumash, didn't Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov know the tragedies that were going to befall Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael? We learned the Tochachim, the Chukosai, that talks about the Churban that's going to come upon Eretz Yisrael. So what did they go in for? We knew the price in advance. We knew the price that we were going to pay in advance. A terrible, terrible price. So stay out, so don't go. No. Because in the ultimate sense, the growth and the development of a Klal Yisrael into the great Klal Yisrael that will one day come can only come through Eretz Yisrael. So even though we know in advance what the price to be paid, and we know it clearly, it's stated in Torah, it was given to Klal Yisrael before they crossed the Jordan with the Sefer Torah that said, "V'kom ha'am azev zon acharei alehei nechar aretz," it was all written in there. So were there any Shaina Yidin that said, "Nechkenish tachayim, chachmanim mitzvam, my enikuch may become aivdei avedu zor in this land, I don't want to come in over here." But the God's plan for Klal Yisrael is that you will only achieve greatness through the spiritual dimension of this land. And it will be dangerous, yes, there are going to be problems. There are going to be all forms of seductions. We know this in advance. There'll even have to be a churban, and not only that, there'll have to be a second churban. And in the ultimate sense, Sandy, you're absolutely right. Because what does he say over here at the end of the Devarim? That the Shavtad Hashem Elokecha, in the ultimate sense of history, you're going to return to God, your God. V'shav Hashem Elokecha et shvutcha v'nichamecha, v'shav v'kibetzcha mikol ha'amim. That, God says, will happen. I don't have the right to say, let somebody become chai because he has a chance to do tshuva afterwards. But that was clearly part of the outline of the whole flow of history. That's what it was going to be. And you can't stop history because of the dangers that are waiting for you on the road. Maybe nobody should have children. There's only one way to get out of this world, you know. Nobody gets out alive. So therefore what? My same fellow who asks, if you would know the price that you'd have to pay, a 500,000 Moroccan Jews, so why don't you ask somebody, if you'd know the price you have to pay for being born, you know what the price is? The ultimate price. You ain't getting out of here alive. So would you pay the price? Because it's stupid. That points out the stupidity of the question. But when he says it to these young people, they're left overawed. God forbid, I would never have ever paid that kind of a price. And the price that we therefore had to pay for this state is 500,000 Jews became free. It's such sophistry. It's so bad. And you know what the worst part about it is? The fellow who said the shir has never analyzed it himself. And he thinks that what he's saying is real hashkafas haTorah. That's the real tragedy. That's the tragedy.